Michelle comes to us from Hanford. I've had the privilege of seeing her work with some of the ladies that she sponsors, and I'm really impressed with what I see in her. So I hope that you'll welcome Michelle.
My name's Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. I live in Hanford. I am not from Hanford. I'm from San Diego. I don't play Hanford, by the way. I had to say it. I just had to say it. I've learned to have a sense of humor in the program. As I've longer been sober, the more of a sense of humor I get, and the more nervous I get, the worse it gets. So once I see a few lines, I'll be okay. I don't even know where to start. My first recollection of a drink was when I was 14, and I have a tattoo on my shoulder to remind me of it, because we got drunk that night, we drew the tattoo out, and the next day we did the tattoo on my back, and then I heard about it for 6 months from my parents. That's the first time I remember drinking. And I liked how it made me feel. Growing up, I didn't grow up in an alcoholic home. My father was an alcoholic, but I had alcoholic grandparents. My mother's a functioning alcoholic, but it wasn't something that was in the household to where I wasn't abused, I wasn't beaten. You know, I had a good childhood, except for the simple fact that I had to grow up really fast. At 3 years old, I was changing diapers on my little sister and my brother. So I learned to be older than when I was at a young age. When my sister and brother were old enough to take care of themselves, I decided it was time for Michelle to try to be Michelle and rebel against everything that my parents tried to teach me. So I ran away from home, called my mom and let her know where I was at. That's how bad of a kid I was. When I started doing that, I started drinking with my friends because it was the only thing I knew how to do, how to socialize. Because in school, I was the wallflower because I was the smart kid. You know, I was like the kid with the pens and the pocket protector. I was the nerd. So I was a straight-A student, so nobody really liked me, and I was real quiet and didn't talk to anybody. Once I started drinking, I could talk to everybody. I could dance. I could do anything you wanted me to do. I knew how to do it. When I was probably about 16, 17 years old is when it got really fun for me, because I looked older than what I was, and I acted older, so I could get into the bars. And at that time, they really didn't card too much going into the bars, so I could go into the bars and I could drink and get drunk, and I could go in with $2 and leave with $2 and I could be drunk. As a female, I knew how to work it in the bars. I don't suggest that because it's really not a good thing, but, you know, back then it worked. So for a few years, it was fun. I didn't get in a whole lot of trouble. When I was almost 18 years old was the first time I had a run-in with the cops. We were partying on the beach, and I got drunk, and I decided I was going to lay out, and I went to sleep and passed out on the beach, and I got arrested. I got thrown in the back of a cop car and taken to jail, and they called my father because I was under 18 and said, if you come get her within the hour, we won't charge her. My dad proceeded to come pick me up and hit me in the back of the head and call me a... I can watch my language, there's kids in the room. He called me some names that I didn't need to hear. And that was all that was ever said about it. We never talked about it. After that, I got into a relationship with a man who liked to put his hands on me, so I got drunk even more. I got drunk so I didn't have to feel it. And, you know, at this time, I'm barely 18 years old, and I'm in a relationship I shouldn't be into. But he put his hands on me, so I would drink, and every time, he'd come home, I'd drink more, and then I wouldn't have to remember, and my mom just thought I was a klutz, because I always had, like, black eyes or bruises, and I'd be like, Mom, I ran into the door. To this day, today I can say that, and it's really true, because I am a klutz. But then I allowed that to happen for about a year and a half before my mom finally realized what was happening, and... when I tried to get away from him, my father decided it was a good idea to ship me off to Arkansas in the middle of the summer, and it was 95 degrees at night, and it was 100% humidity. It was the worst experience of my life. Within a month I was home, I got a hold of that boyfriend. He sent me money to bring me home, and I went back to him, and I drank even more. After about 8 months of it, I finally packed up, and... he left for work one day, and I packed everything up in my little Mazda GLC that I could fit in there, including the microwave and the iron. I said, I can't take the washer and dryer, so I'm going to take the iron and the microwave, and I'm going to show him. And packed it up in my little car and drove to my sister's, where I proceeded to get obliterated for about 3 days, and met my first ex-husband, and was in that relationship for 5 years, and I drank every single day. I used to hide beer in my underwear drawer because my ex-husband never went in my underwear drawer, so I could hide it in there. And I was a waitress, so I always had money every night, so I could replace whatever beer I drank in the refrigerator, I could replace it without him knowing I drank it. And I'd keep a 12-pack in the truck, and I'd keep there in the car, trunk of the car, and then I would keep some in the underwear drawer. There was always alcohol hidden somewhere in the house where I didn't think he looked. Needless to say, he knew I was doing that. He just let me do it, because I always took the trash out, and that was his job, and to trash out the empty bottles. That went on for about 5 years. But during that time, I had gotten pregnant, and I had an ectopic pregnancy that almost killed me. And I was 23 years old, and I had a doctor walk in and look at me and say, "If you ever want to have kids, you might want to start saving your money," and walked out of the room. And I looked at him like, "What just happened?" And decided from there I was going to try to drink myself to death because I didn't understand what was happening, and that was my solution, was I didn't want to deal with it, so I'm going to get drunk. And I drank. I drank until the point where my ex-husband said, "It's either me or your booze." And I said, "Goodbye," because I'd rather be drunk than have to deal with life and reality. In between that, I had some other things happen, and I apologize to anyone here, but I don't share it in an open meeting, so that's why there's some gaps in there. But, and those things caused me to drink even more. And then when that happened, I drank even more. There was never a time that I was sober. I'd wake up and I had drink. I'd go to work and I had a bottle in my purse, or I had a bottle in the car. And I drank schnapps because it smelled like candy. So everybody thought I ate a lot of candy. I was about this big around, so why would you think I ate that much candy? I was too skinny to be eating that much candy. I didn't eat, really. I just drank. When my first ex-husband and I split up, I went on a drinking mission that I was going to drink every single day as much as I could possibly drink until I killed myself. Needless to say, in that year and a half, I put myself into some predicament that as a female I shouldn't have been into. And because those things happened to me and I couldn't do anything about it, I decided that I was going to drink myself to death. I tried it a few times. I was not successful at it. Obviously, I'm standing here today. But for probably a good year and a half, that's all I did was I drank every day as much as I could possibly drink anything I could get my hands on. Towards the end of my drinking, it got to a point if you put rubbing alcohol in front of my face, I would have drank it. I didn't care. As long as it said alcohol, I was going to drink it. But I didn't have a problem, by the way. I was perfectly fine. You know, by this time, none of my family except for my mother wanted anything to do with me. My dad was done with me. My little brother was done with me. My sister had already cut me off. I used to call my brother at 3 in the morning and be stuck in Hollywood at the Tropicana not being able to find my car. And my brother would come and get me. And my car ended up being like a block from where I was at. I was just so drunk I couldn't find it. I left a friend in my car at the Marine Corps ball one time because I was so drunk I couldn't find my car. And I left him there at Camp Pendleton, and we lived in San Marcos. I went home with someone else because I didn't know where my car was. I needed to go home. 2 days later, I found my car. My friend had ended up getting a ride home. But at that time, I really didn't care because you really weren't my friend. You know, if you wanted to get to know me, you weren't my friend because you weren't going to get to know anything about Michelle because Michelle doesn't like who Michelle is. Or didn't at that time. So, on my 25th birthday, my stepmother's father decided that he was going to take me to Las Vegas for my birthday. I went to Las Vegas with $20. It's really, I mean, how much, you know, I needed a little bit more than that, but that's all I had. And 3 days later, I came to you on the phone wearing the same clothes I had three days before with no money, no wallet, no ID, nothing, and no friends. I was on the phone on a sweat call trying to find a way to get home. I'd been so drunk for 3 days, I don't know where I was at, don't know what I did, don't know who I did, I don't know what I was doing for 3 days. A friend of mine sent me enough money for a bus ticket, a pack of cigarettes, a Pepsi, and a Big Mac. I had 25 cents left in my pocket after I bought all that. Spent 10 hours on a bus ride home, wondering what the hell was going on in my life. What scared me the most was I couldn't remember those 3 days. You know, I know not remembering a night you know, coming to the next day is okay because you're usually in a safe place. I was in a place I didn't know anybody. And I came to not knowing where I was at. What, you know, someone could have killed me for all I, you know. I didn't care. So I spent 10 hours on a bus riding back down to Escondido from Las Vegas to figure out what was going on in my life and what I was going to do with myself. I got back to my friend's house. My friend said, you need to call your mom, let your mom know you're alive. I called my mom. My mom, she said, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. Until you get help, don't call me. That was the last person in my life that I thought, she was my biggest enabler. She always stuck up for me. And all of a sudden, she just cut me off. I said, Mom, what do I do? She said, I don't know. Call Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what's Alcoholics Anonymous? I'd never heard of it because nobody in my family was in recovery. You know, we had drug addicts and alcoholics in my family, but no one ever did anything about it. So she got me a number, and I called the number. And the first meeting they tried to send me to was a gay woman's meeting. Now, I don't have a problem with anybody doing whatever they want to do. I don't care. At that time where I was at in my life, that wasn't the place for me because I was already freaking out about I had to do something different. That was not a place for me to go. So they sent me to this Alano Club in Pomona. You know, I ended up going up to my dad's too. After my mom told me where to call, I went to my dad's up in Pomona. And they sent me to an Alano Club over there. And I walked in the room, and this lady goes, you must be a newcomer, and threw me in a chair and scared the living daylights out of me. And I sat in that same chair for 30 days. She scared me so bad that I was like, oh, my gosh, she's going to kill me. She's going to take my money. She's going to take my car. Now, just before I went to Pomona, I sold my car that I threw a rod in for $365 because I didn't have any money, and that was the only thing I could sell to get money. And that's what I lived off of for a month. I was eating Cheetos and, you know, whatever I can buy for like 75 cents, you know, at a time. I was like stripping and saving the money. And I went to this meeting, and the second meeting I went to, a man stood up for 47 years. Now, at that time, he'd been sober longer than my mother had been alive. And to me, that was just, I didn't understand that. But I listened to him. And if it wasn't for this lady, her name was Sue, she still goes to meetings at the Alano Club. If it wasn't for her, I don't think I would have stayed. When I sat in those chairs for 30 days, didn't think I belonged there. I was 25 years old, and everybody in there was like, to me at the time, was old, you know. They're like 40, 50 years old. I'm like, yeah, I don't belong in here. Someone told me to listen to the similarities instead of differences, and I said, that doesn't work, and I started listening to the differences still for a long time. And I stayed sober like that for 6 months, not doing a whole lot, and then I ran into this girl who was my age. She had 5 years of sobriety, and I was like, cool, I could BS this girl. I was really wrong. She got in my face, and that was it. I was like, oh, you're fired. You can't be in my face because you scare me, and I don't know how to fight, and I'm going to run. You know, and that's what I do is I run. So I did step 1, 2, and 3, and they said that I needed to do step 4, and I told them they were crazy, and I wasn't going to do it. So I did 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and I stayed like that for 2 years. I stayed sober, and I stayed miserable. In that 2 year period, I managed to graduate high school because I was going to do something, you know, to say this is working for me. So I graduated high school at 25. Yeah, that was a big deal. I joined the Navy. Okay, I did it sober, and I did it with a recruiter who was in the program, and he still lied to me. So just because he's in the program does not mean he's going to tell you the truth. I thought he would. Didn't work. I also got married. Backtrack just a little bit. I was 6 months sober. My first divorce was final. And every liquor store along the way to the Alano Club was chained up and locked. So God was working in my life at that time, and I just didn't know it. I remember that day. There was this big, huge padlock like this big on the first liquor store I came to. Anyways, where was I? So I got married, had almost 2 years sober, and I couldn't believe that there was someone in my life that loved me for me. They loved me for, I wasn't a piece of meat to them because most men in my life had treated me like that. and I couldn't believe I met somebody who wasn't treating me that way. So I decided I was going to do everything I could to ruin that relationship. And I did. I did everything I could possibly do besides drink to ruin that relationship, and I mean everything. And the result was I still drank. After I stood up in a meeting and celebrated 2 years, I was back in Florida in Pensacola in A school, and I stood up at that meeting and had to humble myself and say, I'm a newcomer. And that was the hardest thing I ever had to do in this program. And I never forget that day because I don't ever want to have to have that feeling again. You know, there was a woman who was in there that was helping me while I was there. Because I didn't want to have a sponsor there because I was only there for 6 weeks. And she walked me through some stuff and made me read some stuff, and she made me learn about a God and a higher power. She made me read a book called Heaven in High Gear and God on a Harley. And it's second grade reading. But I read those books 5 times. And that helped me to get a concept and understanding of a higher power. To this day, I still have those books and I still read them periodically. Needless to say, that man didn't leave me at that time. He stayed with me and walked through that with me. Because he was also in the program, and he had 6 years at that time that I did that. So I got stationed in Washington, the state of Washington, in Whidbey Island, the coldest, wettest place I could ever imagine being in my life. And being new to sobriety again, I was scared. I didn't know what to do. Started going to some meetings around there and hid myself in the back and didn't want anybody to know who I was. I was trying to go back to some old behaviors because if you don't know me, you'll leave me alone and you won't take anything from me. Because even coming in and being in for a couple years and then coming back in, I still thought all the women in here were evil. And I thought that they wanted my man, my job, my car, my money. I didn't have anything for them to take. And if they could take it from me, it wasn't mine in the first place. But it took me years to figure that out. You know, it took a lot of work for me to figure that out. Went to Washington, and I started after a while being in Washington. I got involved in the program after a while. I started working some steps. I got a sponsor who had, she was an expert heroin addict, and she was exactly like me. You know, she related to everything that I had been through in my life. She had been through. Went through a couple sponsors before her that they like to pat you on the butt, and I was one that needed to be kicked in it. I needed the 2x4 upside the head. That was the only way I was going to get this thing. And you can ask my sponsor today, and still the same way. She has to take a 2x4 and put it upside my head for me to do something about it. But I stuck around and started working the program, started doing the steps. I started to get involved in service work. My life started to get better. You know, my life started to improve, and I started to get happy. You know, and I didn't know what that was, and that scared me. But I didn't drink. You know, I started talking about it, and I started going to more meetings, and I started asking people what this was and what these feelings were and why it had to be like that. And they couldn't tell me why. They just told me it is. You know, but when I worked my first 4 steps, the sponsor I had, it took her 6 months to get me to do it because I didn't want to face the demons from my past, and I didn't want to face the things that Michelle did, not what everybody else did to Michelle, but what Michelle did. And one day, I ended up at her front door. To this day, I don't know how I got there. I just know I got there. I flung her front door open, and excuse me with the kids, but I flung the door open, and I said, here, look, it is. And I threw it at her, and I said, that's it, that's me, that's all of it, take it or leave it. And she looked at me, and she goes, it's about time. I looked at her, and I wanted to slap her, you know. And we sat down, and we spent 12 hours on the floor in her living room doing my fifth step. We walked outside to the burn barrel, and we burned it and watched it go up in ash until we couldn't see it anymore. And that was my first experience with fully letting go. It was the most exhilarating experience of my life. When I went home, my soon-to-be ex-husband called my sponsor and said, what did you do with my wife? I want my wife back. I said, this is it. This is what you get, honey. And so in there, I started to get more involved, and I started working all the rest of my steps. I started working with other women in the program. I started speaking at meetings, which I still to this day hate. But I do it because I was taught in this program, you can't keep it unless you give it away. Well, I have to give it to you for me to be able to keep it. So I still don't understand that concept, but I just do it because it works. Today, I'm not as involved in the program as my sponsor thinks I should be right now. But I'm working on it, and she knows that. We talked about it. In the past 8 months, it's been 8 months now? 9 months. 8 or 9 months. I had to walk away from a relationship that I had for 14 years. That was one of the hardest things I had to do. But you want to know what? It's the best thing that I've ever done in my life. And that man was in the program, still to this day is in the program. He's got almost 19 years in the program. Because he didn't want the relationship anymore, but I had to be the one to say, I had to be the one to make the move and make the comment and for him to say it's over. And at first I was devastated, and the very first thought that went through my head was, I'm going to go get drunk. You know what I did? I drove my truck, I got in the truck, and it drove to my friend Jeff's house. I drove right past the liquor store, I didn't stop for cigarettes. I was like, Jeff's got them, I'm good, I don't need to stop for cigarettes, because if I would have stopped for cigarettes, I would have bought a bottle. And I went to her house and sat on the concrete in the backyard, and I just broke down. I thought my life was over. And let me tell you something, my life just began. God willing, February 4th, next year I'll have 12 years.
Yeah.
And you know, not how I'm doing it. The past 8 months in recovery has been the best eight months in recovery that I've had in that time. Because I have learned more about Michelle and who I am and what I want out of life and what makes me happy. I looked back. I had to do what my sponsor calls the mini fourth, which I had never done a mini fourth, so I was like, what the heck is that? And she told me what it was. So I tell my sponsors now they have to do a mini fourth on things. Because I think it's kind of cool. My sponsor made me do it. You're going to do it. She's over there laughing now. She thinks I'm kidding. But when I did that, I was able to take... I did a mini fourth on the relationship because the relationship, everything in the relationship came from recovery. I learned everything I knew in that relationship in recovery. My sponsor said, do a mini fourth on it. What's your part in it? And I was like, I don't have a part in that. It wasn't me. It was him. Oh, that was a crock. Because when I did that mini fourth, I started it begrudgingly, and I wrote 9 pages. I didn't stop for 3 hours. That's all. I had writer's cramp when I was finished. But you know, when I did that, I learned what my part in that was and the things I need to fix and the things I needed to work on, not his part, because what he does and what his part is has nothing to do with me anymore. You know, I had to fix Michelle. And I started doing that. I haven't fixed me completely. I'm still kind of screwed up. You know, my friends will tell you that here, you know. But they love me that way because that's part of who Michelle is. I live life today to the fullest. You know, I have a God in my life today. It took me a long time to be okay with the God concept because I always thought of God as religion, and I don't believe in organized religion. I'm completely against it because of, you know, my mother is really into the church, and I learned that it's okay. I don't have to be into organized religion. I can have a higher power of my own understanding, and it doesn't have to be yours. I don't have to believe the same way you do. And I told my mother that one day, Mom, I believe in God. I just don't believe in your God. And my mom, if she was in front of me, she probably would have slapped me. Luckily, she was in Washington, and I was here. But I know who my God is today, and I rely on that God today because I know my higher power and the women and some of the men in this program helped get me through some of the roughest times in my recovery and some of the roughest times in my life. You know, I think I've grown more in the last 8 months than I did in 10 years, you know. My sponsor said, thank God I've got you, you know. And I didn't understand, and it took me a week to figure out what she meant. I just agreed with her like I knew what she was talking about because I didn't want her to know I didn't know. And now she knows I kind of played it off. You know, but I share my experience with the girls that I sponsor. You know, I have one of my girls I'm walking through relationship issues with, two of them as a matter of fact, you know, and I share my experience with them, and they're coming out on the other end of it like so much faster than I did, and it really sucks. So like, why can I get it that fast, you know? I have one girl I sponsor who we call Minnie Michelle, because she's the spitting image of what I was when I came into this program. And it's really scary to look at her, you know, thinking that that's what I was like. And but it's neat for me because I get to share my experience with her and I get to walk her through things. You know, today, because of this program, my life is fully blessed. You know, every day is a blessing in my life. My friends, my family, I have my whole entire family back in my life. Everybody, they call me. I get Christmas cards from my family today that says I love you on them, and it's like, oh my God, that's so cool. My niece, you know, she's never seen me drunk. She's 18 years old. I never drank around her. She doesn't know that side of auntie, you know, and that's a blessing, you know, because she thinks I'm perfect. That's totally cool. I'm not perfect, but she likes to think I am, and I let her do that. But I'm a success because of this program today. I'm blessed because of this program today. I'm blessed because the people need room, the newcomers, the old-timers. You know, because when the newcomers come in, I listen to what you share about, and it reminds me of where I was at, and I don't want to go back there. You know, it reminds me of that humbling experience of standing up and saying, I'm a newcomer again after celebrating 2 years. Don't ever want to do that again. I love my life today. I love the person I've become. You know, you know, the old cliche people say is, you know, they strive to be happy, joyous, and free. I insist on being happy today. I smile every day. Every day. With or without my teeth in. I still smile. You know? Because of my drinking, I lost part of my teeth, and I used to be embarrassed about that. So what? It's part of who I am. You know? You just ain't never going to see me without them. That's all, you know? Several old family has. But, you know, because of the program, though, because of working the steps and working with others and staying close and talking with my sponsor, I talked more with my sponsor in the last 8 months than I did in, 4 years that you've been my sponsor? Because I need her, and I realize how much I really need her in my life, whether things are good or bad. I call her when things are good, and say, hey, it's good. You know, and she'll call me back going, are you sure? She don't usually call this much, you know. But I do it now because I tell my sponsees that they have to do it, so I kind of have to kind of live up to the other end of that. So if I'm not doing it, I can't expect them to do it. You know, but today in my life, you know, I'm a success in the Navy, you know. It's amazing the things I've accomplished in the Navy, you know, and I share about it because I did it in the Navy, and I would never have done it if I wasn't in this program. I am an airplane mechanic. They let me work on billion-dollar aircraft. Me, I'm an alcoholic. If they knew who I was, you think they'd let me do that? You know, and I used to think like that. And it's like, no, you know why they let me do it? Because I'm good at my job. You know, I teach. I stand at a podium all, you know, every day and teach sailors and Marines how to work on aircraft. They look at me like I'm crazy. You know, because I'm the only female there. And that's okay. You know, my friends at work, they look at me like I'm one of the guys, which is okay. They most of the time. You know, I don't like being a guy, but that's how they look at it. I'm okay with that. You know, but today I know how to do those things, and they allow me to do that. I'm allowed to work on these things today because I've done the steps I need to do to be who I am today. I'm an honest, trustworthy person. I don't know how to be in any other way but honest. You know, I learned that from my sponsor and from the people in the program. I can't lie. I feel bad. I get a stomachache and I go throw up, and then I have to go tell on myself. You know, that really sucks. I don't like that feeling. You know, it's like telling that little fib to go do something, and I can't do it. You know, I've tried. This doesn't work for me today. I truly am blessed. I really don't know how much to say, how much I can just trust that. You know, I know working these steps. It's hard. We say it, everybody says keep it simple and it's simple, it's easy. It really is easy. We make it hard. You know, once I did it, every time I do it, it gets easier. And now when I'm asked to do it, I do it. I procrastinate a little bit. I have to be honest. He's looking straight at me. And so there. You know, I do procrastinate a little bit. But when I start doing that, I call her. I'm like, okay, this is going on in my life. Can I, like, hold that off for a minute? And, you know, and we work it out. You know, I get to work with children today. I work with special needs children. And that was something, you know, because of this program, I'm allowed to do that. I am a safe person to be around kids today. You know, they did a background check, and I'm okay. That's so cool. You know, and it's because I work the steps, and I stay close, and I have a higher power, and I work this program. I work it on a daily basis. I may not do it perfect every day. The one thing I do perfect every single day, I don't pick up a drink, period. I do what I have to do to take care of me today. You know, I'll share this one last thing here, and, you know, today I got to do something for the first time in my life. Next Wednesday, I will be 39 years old, and for the first time in my life, I went and bought a car by myself, all by myself, you know? It's funny, because I can come in here, and I can say that to you guys, and you know exactly what I mean, you know exactly how I feel. I go to work and say that, and they look at me like I'm crazy. I'm always the crazy white woman running around the office, you know? But I was able to do that today. And that was, you know, and it was funny was because I got it almost on all my terms. I didn't know how to do that. My ex-husband did all that stuff. You know, I didn't know how to do it. And I thought I was self-sufficient. And I learned that I really wasn't that self-sufficient. I had to call, like, how do you do this? You know, I didn't know how to do a lot of stuff. My ex-husband always did it. You know, so I, like, got to be reborn again in the past 9 months, you know. And most of my friends like me, like who I am, you know. I'm blessed. You know, I have 2 dogs, and those are my kids today, because I walked through not being allowed to have children in this program. But I had women in here who took a hold of me and walked me through that. I was down for 6 weeks, and the women in, when I was in Libby Island, the women in the program took the 12-step meeting that we, 12 and 12 meeting we did for the women, and moved it to my house for 6 weeks because I couldn't make a meeting. That's a blessing in this program. You know, we do that for each other. You know, life is good. You work this program, stay close, and do what's suggested. They tell you to sit on your head in the corner and goggle peanut butter. It'll keep you sober for the day. Do it. Because you know what? It'll keep you sober for that day. You're going to be worried about choking on peanut butter instead of drinking. You know? Someone said that to me one time in a meeting, and I thought they were crazy. But I understand the concept today. You know, I'm clear-headed, well, most of the time. The gray hair is kicking in, so memory loss is kicking in. We were joking about that today. You know, and I can joke around about those things today. Stay close. Women with the women and men with the men. Period. No, you know, I learned that the hard way because I didn't want to listen, you know. It will screw you up, you know. Get a sponsor. Get phone numbers. Go to meetings, get involved. That's what's going to keep you sober. You know, that's what's going to keep you sane. You know, I have most of my sanity. I don't say all because I still get a little crazy. You know, but if you do those things and the things are suggested in here, you'll make it. You know, there's statistics on us, or the statistics for us, the statistics for us, you know, they're not very high for us making it. You know, but we can prove them wrong. We can change those statistics as long as we do what's suggested in these rooms. And I go to meetings. I go to 2 meetings regularly during the week, and then I make other ones periodically throughout there because being in Navy, I have duty and all kinds of other weird stuff that comes up. My dogs need something. I was waiting to see her reaction to that one. You know, but you make those meetings. You're new. You make the 90 in 90 days. You know, I did 2 meetings a day every day because I didn't know what else to do. I didn't have a job at the time, you know. I didn't have a home. I didn't have a job. I didn't have nothing. So I made meetings, you know. I hung out at the Lana Club. When you do those things and you stick close, you know, this program will work for you. You know, and I truly know it. I can tell you right now, I am living proof that miracles happen in this program, you know, because I should have been dead in a gutter with the things that I did and the things that I went through. And I'm not dead in the gutter. I'm standing up. I hold my head up high. I walk proudly today. because I know who I am and I like who I am and I really don't care if you do or not. That used to be a problem of mine. You had to like me. Today it doesn't matter. I like if you like me. It's really cool. But it's not what I live by today. I live by if I like myself and if I can look myself in the mirror today and every day I look in the mirror. You can't know she's dead. Okay, you better stop it. You're not going to be dead anymore. Yeah. But I like who I am today. I like who I became. And I love my life today. It's not perfect. By any means, I have my days, but I know not to drink, and I know what to do. I pick up the phone no matter how much it weighs. I carry one in my pocket 98% of the time. I don't have one in my pocket now because it would probably go off, and I want to answer it while I'm standing up here, so I left it in the car, you know. But life is good, and, you know, in my new car. I got to meet me. It's a big running joke for the people that know me. I drive normally a big truck, and I went from a big lifted pickup to a little meet me car. So, anyway, life is good today. Stick close to the program. Get phone numbers. Don't be afraid to walk up and ask for a phone number. You know, every time someone's asked me, I gave it to them. You know how many of them called me? Like 5. But I give it out anyway. Because eventually, see, she asked for my number and she called me. I was like, who are you? I'm kidding. You know, but call. I sleep with 2 phones next to the bed. Intentionally for people to call because I've gotten calls at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning and I answer the phone. Because someone did it for me. You know, don't be afraid to use the phone. And don't think you're going to bother somebody. So what if you do? You're trying to save your ass. You know, they'll get over it. They can make a pot of coffee. It's okay. We know how to drink coffee in here. You know, everybody does. But don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid of this program because it really does work. My name's Michelle and I am an alcoholic.
We have just a couple minutes left. We'd be happy to have Michelle answer any questions that you might have. Raise your hand and she'll call on you. Yeah. I'll give you one to start. Which step has had the most profound impact on you?
4 and 5.
And why?
Four and five had the most impact on me because that's where I got to really know who I was and what my part in things were and what I really did. 4 and 5 had a big, because that was my biggest hurdle. I know for a lot of the girls that I've worked with, 4 and 5 is the biggest hurdle for them. And for me to be able to get past that was a big step for me. I can't even tell you the feeling. The feeling was like that someone took that 1,000-pound bag of boulders off your back and dropped it. You know, that's what it felt like, and it's just amazing.
Are you
taking the application? No, not yet. I want to have fun, and my sponsor says no. It's always the last.
How did you choose your sponsor?
Oh, how did I choose my sponsor? See, my current sponsor, this is how I chose her. I got to Hanford, and I went to a Tuesday night meeting, and we went to dinner, and one of her other girls that she sponsored, her husband spilled his Pepsi on my yellow dress in my lap while we were at the restaurant. That's how we became friends. And but I got to know who she was, and she had more sobriety than me, and she'd worked all 12 steps, and she worked with about, I don't know, 100 other women. And I didn't like her. That's why I asked her. When I first met her, I didn't like her. And that's why I asked her. She knows that. I told her that. I didn't like her. But today, she's one of the most wonderful women I know. And I do love her, so it worked. I picked someone I didn't like. So I figured if I didn't like her, I didn't have to work any steps. I didn't work, and she didn't let me go, you know? Wouldn't fire me. So. Alright,